As the World Falls Down by Darth Stitch, read by Silvercat 1620. Summary. There's a long-standing grudge between the Goblin King and the Lord of Nightmares and Dreams. Or, that's what King Jareth thinks. 1. There's such a fooled heart beating so fast. Isabel calls it kilig. And once Sarah Williams understood the definition of that particular Filipino word, she had to agree with her. It was a universally accepted fact amongst the students in the university that Professor Robert Gadling's boyfriend was ridiculously gorgeous, and was the cause of many a kilig meltdown. Campus legends were a bit confused about the first official sighting of Murphy, as one version had it that he'd been seen in the background during a Zoom class held by the professor. Another version said that he'd first appeared during one of Professor Gadling's infamous Shakespeare rants and called him out on it, claiming that he was jealous of dear Will. That prompted another discussion about whether or not Professor Gadling was a secret immortal, but that was a story for another day. There was also the class that witnessed the epic Marlowe versus Shakespeare quote battle that the two had, which had been partially recorded by one enterprising student, and it was now busy making the rounds on campus social media because that voice, OMFG! The latest one was Murphy doing the Shakespeare reading in Calliope's class. The common consensus among everyone once the video had made the campus rounds was, I am deceased. Sarah could commiserate. She'd been there, and she still wasn't over that voice. It had thrown Sarah for a loop when her flatmate admitted that Oñeros was her ex-husband. Apparently, Thomas Murphy had some very interesting nicknames, but they suited him perfectly. These days, Calliope and Murphy were now at the level of very dear friends, which kind of explained to the current ridiculousness that was unfolding. Today was the Lothlorien Fair, which was basically a LARP festival where, instead of just recreating the medieval or Renaissance era, everyone could come as a character from some mystical universe or other. Obviously, there were a fair amount of hobbits, elves, and wizards running around, along with a few more characters from the various D&D-inspired RPGs. She even recognized a witcher and his Yaskier, and whoever that guy was, he was almost a dead ringer for Henry Cavill. Nice. Conveniently, this meant fewer complaints from the history department. It also meant that there was more room for creative anachronisms such as Shire potatoes that someone was selling in one of the booths, to say nothing of the Rivendell Lembas, which was actually the most delicious naan bread, sold in yet another stall. Sarah took a deep breath and sighed. The air was fragrant with spices and cooking food. She was definitely going to try some of the goodies later. She joined Calliope and the rest of her friends in the stands as a nightly tournament was happening. It was all the more entertaining as a few of the professors were actually very good at the whole sword and shield thing. They all cheered at the bout between Professors Michael Percival and Nicholas Chevalier. The cheers were even louder when it was Professor Duncan MacLeod versus Professor Robert Gadling. Yeah! Kick his ass, Professor G! Bellowed Dustin Henderson from the stand just above her. Sarah wasn't the one to ask about any form of martial arts, but even to her untrained eyes, the two men fought with an odd sense of realism to it. No fancy Hollywood choreography involved. It was just as if they'd both walked out of the wars of ancient history and straight into the present. There were even a few dirty tricks included, which sent Professor MacLeod swearing and Professor Gadling laughing at him for it. "He's an old soldier, Highlander! Don't let your guard down for an instant!" yelled Professor Pearson, who was red-faced with laughter. "You might want to defend mine honor, old man," Professor MacLeod yelled back. He yelped as he narrowly escaped another well-timed strike from his opponent. A few moments later, MacLeod had lost his sword, and Gadling had his sword at his throat. "I yield, you bloody Sassenach," MacLeod grumbled good-naturedly. He looked over at a still-laughing Professor Pearson. "Oi! Shouldn't you be avenging your lost love here?" "Loser gets to buy the drinks, eh, Pearson?" Gadling called gleefully, sweaty and flushed with victory. "Well, if it's free beer," Professor Pearson said, going down the stands to the cheers of the rest of the crowd. Beside her, Rhodes giggled. It looks like Uncle Dream's the one with the brain cell today. This is not going to end well. No, Calliope murmured all mischief. Will you be sending your knight off without a favor, Oneiros? Sarah blinked. She was not sure when Murphy had joined them, but he was there right now, only he had his face buried in his hands, shaking his head. I have never seen you this flushed, Oneiros. Even your ears are red, Calliope said in delight. It's adorable. That finally got him to look at her, and both Sarah and Rose had to hold on to each other as they were giggling so hard. He tried to do his best to look properly affronted, despite the rather appealing blush on his cheeks. Those unusual dark blue eyes were alight with amusement and some other emotion that Sarah couldn't identify.
You are a minx, my dear Calliope. I rue the day that I introduced the two of you.
Holy shit! Who knew we had professors who could kick serious ass, am I right? That was from Dustin again. Professor Pearson won the bout against Professor Gadling, but it was just by a hair. Professor Gadling didn't mind, though, as he ended up being thoroughly kissed by his boyfriend, again to more cheering from the peanut gallery, and the two of them ended up disappearing somewhere for quite some time. Sarah tried not to think about that too hard. Someone had put on some sort of suitably fantastical theme music. It was beginning to get on Sarah's nerves. Hold still, Max told her sternly, eyeliner pencil still in hand. Not unless you want me to poke your eye out. Sorry. Dustin, don't you dare spill that frap on this gown, or so help me. Isabel was going through some vocal exercises. Eleven was going through the scales with her. Eddie was tuning his guitar, frowning as he tried out a few chords. Jonathan and Robin were practicing lines together. Nancy was helping Will with his costume. Mike and Lucas were bent over their laptops, sorting out the lighting and sound effects. Iggy Pop was with some of the drama club kids, putting on the last bits of scenery. Steve was busy herding everyone and everything in his capacity as the stage manager. Baby Daniel was in costume already, and Jed and Erica were watching over him, making sure he wasn't going to end up in a sandpit somehow. There weren't any in the general vicinity, but the kid just had the weird ability to attract sand, so nobody wanted to take any chances. It was hilarious that Daniel seemed to be the only baby who somehow understood that they were all just playing pretend and behaved beautifully for everyone involved. Or maybe it was just due to Murphy and his near-magical baby-whispering abilities. Whatever it was, the little guy was happy to play the role of Sarah's stepbrother, who Sarah would need to rescue from the Prince of Stories. Calliope was flitting here and there as the advisor of the entire production, and somehow all the chaos was slowly coming together into some sort of cohesive whole. "Professor Lyra, where's Murphy? I haven't seen him since the tournament." Steve, of course, was slowly but surely edging towards near panic.
"Don't worry, Stephen. Oneiros gave his word, and I have never known him to break it. He will be here."
Sarah fought down a giggle. That one needed to be recorded for posterity. They had needed someone for the role of the Fae and the magical Prince of Stories, and it was a role that Rose Walker had clearly written with Murphy in mind.
"Oh, you have no idea," Rose had said wryly when she'd been asked about it. "I did promise him that I would be kinder to him in my next story."
It was Calliope who said that she would take care of asking him to accept the role, and Sarah was there to witness the whole thing. For good measure, Calliope told Rose that they would need to bring Daniel along after getting his mother's permission. Lyda Hall was a little weird whenever the subject of Murphy was brought up. Rose would just shake her head sadly, and Sarah figured it wasn't her place to pry. In any case, Calliope had planned this whole thing out like a seasoned general, and Murphy's expression when he realized he was well and thoroughly ambushed was just priceless.
"You are a complete and utter menace," Murphy had said,
even as his boyfriend was of no help at all, laughing silently in the background.
"But you are going to say yes, are you not, Oneiros?" Calliope said archly. "Surely you do not wish to disappoint the children."
"Please, Uncle Dream," Rose and Jed had pleaded. Daniel made his own sounds, which sort of sounded like dweem. Sarah wasn't sure, but he was already making valiant efforts to talk, and that first word was probably going to be coming soon. The baby also reached for Dream, clearly wanting to be picked up by him.
So very diabolical,
Murphy muttered, even as he took Daniel from Calliope and gave in to the little boy's demands for cuddles. He sighed, looking very much put upon and long-suffering, but anyone who knew to look for it could see that he was, of course, rather pleased.
Yes, I shall participate in this little performance.
Promise, Uncle Dream? Jed asked. No hiding behind Lucienne, Uncle Dream, Rose reminded. I got Matthew on speed dial.
My own subjects conspire against me,
Murphy grumbled.
Yes, I give you my word. Does that satisfy you?
Daniel crowed happily, joining Rose and Jed in their victory dance. Sarah tried not to laugh at Murphy hiding his smile in Daniel's curly hair. Professor Gadling applauded and swept Calliope a courtly bow.
Milady, that was magnificently well played.
She accepted the tribute with a regal nod and mischief sparkling in her eyes.
You were utterly useless. I hope you know that,
Murphy told his boyfriend with mock severity. Yes, I do, love, but it's not blasted Shakespeare, and it's your niece, who's a better writer than he is. You mark my words. Aw, thanks, Professor G. So, yeah. That really happened, and hilarity ensued with Murphy at the rehearsals. No, he wasn't that he'd put on any prima donna airs. It was that he was surprisingly compliant, being easy to work with and kindly helping Sarah through any awkwardness when it came to the more intense scenes between her character and the prince. She regularly had to fight the urge to giggle and end up ruining a scene, when she'd discovered that he had a knack for making hilariously deadpan asides. Most of the time, he went meekly along with the stage directions, whenever he wasn't busy being adorable with Daniel. All of them had a tacit agreement to take as many pictures as possible, for Professor G's sake. Now, Sarah was fighting down the butterflies in her stomach as she waited for her cue to come on stage. Her parents and little brother were in the audience, and she wanted to smile at Toby, who clearly recognized her and called out her name, but she had to stay in character. And then it was time for Murphy to make his first appearance. There were audible gasps from the crowd as the spotlight fell on the Prince of Stories. It was as if he'd stepped right out of Will Byers's artwork of The King of All Nights Dreaming, a vision in robes of black and gold with jewels sparkling in his hair. A long earring with precious stones sparkled in one ear. He looked completely ethereal and not quite of this world, and when he spoke his first lines, everyone fell completely silent. Sarah was suddenly dead sure she was going to forget every line she'd learned, but he slanted her a look, and there was that familiar friendly kindness and humor in those eyes, which bolstered her courage. Sarah could do this, and she fell into step with him, working through every scene, letting her character fall in love with the Prince of Stories, getting caught up in the magic and the mystery of the story that Rose had written. The audience was on its feet by curtain call. Murphy had led Sarah by the hand to make their final bows, and she'd forgone the usual floral bouquet because Toby was insisting on going to his big sister, so she had an armful of toddler instead. Pretty, he declared, making her laugh. She'd put him down soon enough because at 3, Toby was getting a little bit too heavy to carry for long. He happily held on to her skirts, and at Murphy's gentle prompting, handed over the bouquet. Everything had been wonderful today, at least until the fairies crashed the party. 2. There's such a sad love deep in your eyes. When Sarah had been a little girl, she used to make up stories about her adventures as a brave princess, together with a character she'd called the Goblin King. She had a beautiful, old-fashioned doll given to her by Grandma Amelia, with long, curly, dark hair glittering with sparkly stones, and a white ball gown. Of course, she pretended that she was that doll, and she had let her imagination run wild, as Princess Sarah went through hardships unnumbered and dangers untold to be with her beloved Goblin King. In her child's imagination, she'd pictured the Goblin King to be tall and fair, fey and mysterious, with beautiful mismatched eyes, one brown and the other blue. She even used to draw him in her school notebooks, and she could still wryly trace the evolution of her own artistic skills from her childish scribbles to the more mature work she produced today. She wasn't that little girl anymore, and the Goblin King was just a fond childhood memory. So when she first saw the fairies,
Sarah really thought that they were just another bunch of LARPers crashing the performance. She didn't recognize any of them from the Hellfire Club or the Drama Club. She had to admire the artistry of their costumes, though. Some of the creatures seemed so very real. Whoever built them was some kind of special effects wizard. But then she saw the strangely familiar figure leading them, and she stifled a gasp. She knew him, as if he'd simply stepped out of her childhood memories.
"Hello, Sarah," the Goblin King greeted her, inclining his head regally. "I thought you had forgotten me, but I see you still remember."
Toby whimpered softly, and somehow she just knew she didn't want her baby's brother to catch this man. No, this being's attention. She carefully shielded the small boy behind her skirts. Apparently Murphy had the same idea, because he stepped forward protectively, subtly making sure he was between the two of them.
"You are not welcome here, Goblin King."
That imperious tone was not any kind of acting whatsoever. Neither was the expression on Murphy's face or how it seemed to Sarah's eyes. He was no longer Professor Skadling's secretly dorky and adorable goth boyfriend in a beautiful costume, but truly the Prince of Stories.
"Hail, Lord Morpheus," the Goblin King intoned. "Forgive my little lapse in manners. The mortal girl is dear to me, so I was overhasty in my eagerness to greet her."
"You dare?"
The Goblin King affected a shock, a ruffled hand going to his chest.
"Where is your courtesy, O Prince of Stories? I was invited to your little revelry."
"You most certainly were not."
This time it was Calliope gliding regally on stage, eyes blazing.
"I am the one hosting this gathering, and I most certainly did not invite you."
"It was your mortal pets who summoned me thus," answered the Goblin King, and gestured to a group of Drama Club kids who were watching everything with wide eyes.
"I thought that book of spells was just a joke," said one of them in a small voice.
"Oh, for fuck's sake," Dustin Henderson was heard to say. "Rule 10 in the great list of terrible ideas is don't mess around with books of magic if you don't know what you're doing. What were you guys thinking?"
"You are so very selfish, Lord Morpheus and Lady Calliope, to keep all these mortal pets to yourself. And it is so unfair that you've taken on one so dear to my own heart as your new mortal lover. But I shall be gracious in defeat, and simply wish you both every happiness."
"You speak foolishness, Lord Jareth."
Murphy, no, Morpheus, said coldly. The audience was just watching, thinking it was all part of the show, but Sarah could just feel it. The sense of power and otherworldliness just seemed to emanate from both Morpheus and Calliope. The Goblin King smiled at Sarah and she felt chilled.
"She seems uncertain. Perhaps her heart is not yet given to you fully. Perhaps I have yet a chance."
"I thought I just dreamed you up," were the first words Sarah finally managed to say. "I thought you weren't real."
He laughed.
"You keep company with the Lord of Dreams, sweet Sarah. He should teach you better about the nature of reality and dreams."
"I..." Sarah began.
Morpheus shook his head at her.
"Do not speak to him, Sarah. The fair folk are not to be trusted. He will seek to trick you with your own words."
"Even an invitation may be taken back if one is unwelcome. And once more, you are not welcome here, Jareth of the Labyrinth."
"Begone,"
Calliope commanded.
"Very well. If courtesy has deserted you entirely, we of the Labyrinth still offer our own hospitality. We extend our invitation to your beloved and the child that she so cherishes."
Jareth blew a kiss in Sarah's direction.
"I shall see you soon, my sweet Sarah."
Toby suddenly disappeared. Sarah screamed. 3.
"But I'll be there for you as the world falls down."
Hobgadling had seen some fairly strange things in his 600-odd years of living, thank you very much. And that was before he ended up falling arse over tea kettle for one broody, mercurial lord of dreams and nightmares. Fine, he would modify that to before he finally admitted to himself that he was arse over tea kettle for one broody, mercurial dream lord. It only took him 200 years to figure that one out, and 100 more to get over the sheer panic of, oh shit, why the everlasting fuck did I have to go and fall in love with my best mate? It was worth it in the end, though. Ending up as a hostage of the Unshi court was a little bit new. Although the look of consternation on the bloody Goblin King's face was worth the price of admission. I was expecting the Dream Lord's beloved to be in my presence, the Goblin King looking him up and down with an air of disdain. You are his mortal friend. How did you come to be here? Mate, said Hob carefully, eyeing the frightened little boy currently sitting at the Goblin King's feet. He was already calculating how quickly he could snatch up the kid and get them both out of there. The last time I checked, I'm currently immortal, unless his darkness's sister decided to change her mind about me. And also, Hob didn't tend to use the old yukai tricks that he'd picked up from his friend Kenshin in Japan, but considering the company, now was the best time to use them. So he did. It took the work of seconds to knock down the Goblin King's formidable guard, and he'd blessed whatever instinct that had told him to keep the sword that he'd been using during the tournament and not put it away. He had the blade at the king's throat in moments, even as Toby toddled over to his side with a whimper. He spared a moment to run a gentle hand over the little boy's head, feeling small fists cling to the fabric of his trousers. As I was saying, Hob said steadily, I'm the Dream Lord's beloved. Took a while to get to this point, but we did. What? I know, Hob commiserated with him, bringing the point of the blade just a little bit closer to the king's throat. He smiled as it made the Goblin King draw just a little bit back, his chin lifting up, mismatched eyes meeting Hob's own with considerable annoyance, and just a little touch of fear. Very interesting story. Unfortunately, I haven't the time to tell you about it as this little chap and I are leaving. No, you will not. Fairy dust blew into his eyes, and Hob felt himself fall. Bollocks! He always tended to forget the magical fairy dust. Blast it!
Hobgadling.
There was only one person in the entire universe who could call him by his full name and still make it sound like an endearment. He'd follow that voice to the ends of time and beyond if he had to. Hob opened his eyes. You could have kissed me awake, you know. I mean, if I had to do the whole Sleeping Beauty business, kisses are expected.
Impudence such as yours does not deserve to be rewarded.
The soft press of lips against his own belied those words, and Hob was only happy to slide his hands into black raven hair and deepen the kiss for a few more moments. The two of them swayed for an eternity, lost in a dance just for them.
Mein own heart ist rote,
Hob murmured against those lips, just as Dream drew back, cheeks sweetly flushed. He couldn't help it. The endearments just tripped out of his lips sometimes, and usually in the tongue he'd been born speaking. Dream usually answered in the same language, but the response this time had Hob do a double take. Did I just hear you call me husband?
We still need to get the children back safely to the waking world.
Nope, Hob was not letting his darling get away with his ridiculousness. He tugged at Dream's hands, looked right into his eyes, and had gone dark and starry with emotion. Dream.
Is it truly so objectionable?
You know damn well it isn't, love. I want that. Hob's breath caught. More than anything. Dream huffed, a soft sound of derision.
I have gone and taken leave of my senses. These things never end well, not for me or for the one I care for.
We've been over this, Duck. Me? Immortal. I suspect that that sister of yours knew what she was about, what with your rules and things.
These rules, as well you know, Hobgadling, are not things we may set aside at our convenience.
Dream. Did you or did you not just beat Lucifer Morningstar in the oldest game using hope?
Hob cradled that beloved's face in his hands. Will you not keep any hope for yourself? The world around them shattered like glass, and once more Hob Gadling was falling. But he wasn't afraid as he held on to his love, who was kissing him over and over again, stars in his eyes and smiling brightly like the dawn. They weren't falling anymore.
One half of me is yours, the other half is yours. Mine own, I would say, but if mine, then yours, and so all yours,
Hob murmured between those kisses.
Hob Gadling, did I just hear Shakespeare fall from your lips?
Well, the bloody prat ought to be good for something. 4.
I'll paint you mornings of gold.
It ends as all good stories do. It ends well. Sarah Williams faces down the Goblin King, but this time her mind is clear and her heart is set on one thing. She's not a giddy, naive girl to be seduced and charmed by mystery and cool aloofness. This being, this creature who claimed to be in love with her, had her baby brother, and Sarah was not going to forgive that. Sarah knows her stories and her tropes in hell. She had the actual Prince of Stories to guide her, as well as the rest of the Hellfire Club who insisted on coming along. You need people of intelligence to come along on this quest thing, Dustin said brightly. Everyone stared at him. What? If there was ever a time to quote Tolkien and Pete Jackson, it is definitely now. They all had the obligatory argument about whether or not they should come, but in the end about half of the club came along, because the others all had to do damage control and convince the audience that everything was still part of an even more elaborate show. Morpheus was not thrilled with this, but he had to admit Calliope had a point. Also, he was not about to waste time on further argument, not when Professor Gadling had also been taken. Apparently, that was a mistake on the Goblin King's part, as Sarah had been the intended hostage. Yeah, no, Sarah did not find this ridiculousness romantic in the very least. Sarah would have all the time in the world to have the obligatory freak out about her flatmate being the muse from Greek mythology, that their club's DM was the actual lord of dreams and nightmares, to say nothing about their favorite Shakespeare-hating history professor being a real immortal. She'd have all the time much later for the Hellfire Club to tell her about their favorite cryptids and how they figured it out for themselves. Right now, she had to save Toby.
I have fought my way here to the castle beyond the Goblin City to take back the child you have stolen, for my will is as strong as yours, and my kingdom is great. You have no power over me.
You have no power over me! Sarah shatters Jareth's illusions and his tricks and his pretty, pretty lies. When it's done, she has Toby back, and she's faced with the pitiable figure of a boy her age, mismatched eyes, filled with tears, crumpled on the floor, weeping heartbrokenly. Suddenly she wants to go to him, because from the tales that Morpheus had told her, Jareth was, in fact, just like Toby, a human child stolen from the waking world, only that the attempt at his rescue had ended in failure. And she could never truly forget those wondrous days when she had been Princess Sarah and daydreamed her adventures with him. Toby buries his little face in her shoulder.
Want to go home, Sarah?
Do not trust the fair folk, Sarah Williams. Morpheus's warning rings through her mind again.
Jareth, Sarah said suddenly. And at his name, the Goblin King looks up at her. If you really claim that you love me, then come find me again. No tricks, no illusions, no lies. She took a breath. I don't want this to be my last memory of you. And she walks out of the castle, Toby in her arms, back to her friends and to the end of this tale. The end. Footnote the first. Little Daniel was quite put out that he wasn't allowed to come on this particular adventure, but Aunt Calliope told him that he would have plenty of time for such things once he was much older. No, Daniel, hitting your first birthday and learning to walk would not be a free license to run off on adventures of your own.
Footnote the second. The grimoire that the drama club kids had inadvertently stumbled on was promptly confiscated by Calliope and handed off to Dream, who, of course, made sure that it was tucked safely away in the library of the Dreaming. As a punishment, the drama club kids were promptly lectured on the great list of terrible ideas, as delivered by Steve Harrington. There was a 50-point quiz on it, too. Footnote the third. Daniel Hall's first word, obviously, was Mama. That being said, his mother was ruefully unsurprised that his second word was Dream. Surprisingly, his third word was Birdie, and Matthew was insufferable about that for ages. Footnote the fourth. A new student joined the university the following semester, a tall, fair-haired, thin fellow with a penchant for music. He and Sarah ended up being good friends. If there was to be anything more, well, that was still to be decided. Notes. A. The Zoom call thing is a loving tribute to those cryptid teacher fics that I've read that have Dream wandering into Hobbs Zoom classes and sending everyone into hysterics. Those fics live rent-free in my head. B. Shout out to my fellow Pinoy Sandman fans. Pesteng yawa yan si Dream, hindi pa rin nawalala kilig ko sa boses niya. Wiset? Podficker's note. If I just messed up that last bit, I'm really, really sorry.